Welcome to your personalized Be Freed podcast episode, where we distill the world's best research and wisdom into insights you can actually use. I'm Naya.
And I'm Jackson. Today, we're diving into a topic that affects every relationship but rarely gets discussed openly, the hidden contracts of love and money that make or break relationships.
Exactly. You know, it's fascinating. When we fall in love, we think we're signing up for romance and companionship, but we're actually entering dozens of unwritten agreements about everything from how we'll fight to how we'll manage our finances.
And these contracts have enormous power. Research shows that money disagreements predict divorce more strongly than any other type of conflict. Yet most couples never explicitly discuss these agreements until they're already in crisis.
So, Jackson, I've been reading John Gottman's research, and it's mind-blowing how accurately he can predict divorce by watching couples argue for just 15 minutes.
Right. Gottman's work is legendary. After studying thousands of couples in his Love Lab, he found it's not whether couples fight that matters, but how they fight. The magic ratio is 5-1. Successful couples have 5 positive interactions for every negative one, even during conflicts.
That seems like a lot. How do you maintain positivity when you're genuinely upset?
It's about small moments. A touch on the arm, saying, "I see your point," or using humor to break tension. But equally important is avoiding what Gottman calls the four horsemen: criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling.
I've definitely been guilty of defensiveness. Like when my partner points out I forgot something, and I immediately list all the things I did remember.
We all do it. The key is learning to make repairs. Julie and John Gottman talk about this on Adam Grant's Rethinking podcast, how successful couples quickly pivot from negative interactions with specific repair phrases like, "Can we start over?" or, "I'm feeling flooded right now. Can we take 20 minutes?
So our first relationship contract is really about how we'll handle conflict and make repairs when things go sideways.
Here's something fascinating. Researchers recently conducted a randomized controlled trial where they assigned newlywed couples to different banking setups for 2 years.
Wait, they could actually do that? People agreed to let researchers decide their banking arrangements?
Yes, and the findings were striking. Couples assigned to joint accounts maintained stronger relationship quality over time, while separate account couples showed the usual early marriage decline in satisfaction.
That's surprising. I always thought separate accounts would prevent money fights.
That's the common assumption, but Emily Garbinski from Cornell found across multiple data sets that couples who pool finances tend to report higher relationship satisfaction and lower breakup rates. The effect is especially strong among couples with fewer financial resources.
I can see that. When money is tight, being truly in it together probably matters more. But what about autonomy? Don't people want some financial independence?
Absolutely. That's why many successful couples use a hybrid approach: joint accounts for shared expenses and savings, plus small personal accounts for no-questions-asked spending. It preserves autonomy without fragmenting the household vision.
I love that middle ground. It's like saying, we're a team, but we're still individuals with our own needs. I read this longitudinal study that followed over 4,500 couples and found money conflicts predicted divorce more strongly than disagreements about any other topic, even sex, children, or in-laws.
That tracks with what financial therapists see, too. Money arguments are rarely just about dollars. They're about our deepest values, fears, and family histories.
So how do you have productive money conversations without them exploding?
Financial educator Ramit Sethi recommends scheduled money dates, 1 hour monthly with a clear agenda and no shaming. Start with 15 minutes reviewing numbers, 15 minutes discussing goals, 15 minutes exploring what-ifs, and 15 minutes expressing appreciations and setting next actions.
That structure seems really helpful. I think what makes money talks hard is we jump straight to judgments without separating facts from feelings.
Exactly. Morgan Housel talks about this on the Huberman Lab podcast, how money decisions are 80% emotional and 20% mathematical. The key is acknowledging both parts. First, review the objective facts like balances and cash flow, then explore the subjective values driving your choices.
I also think timing matters. Having these conversations when you're already stressed about bills is setting yourself up for failure.
Absolutely. Schedule them during a calm moment, maybe with some good food, and start with appreciation before diving into challenges. Naya read in a relatable, casual, empathetic voice, like a best friend who just gets you. One of the most contentious contracts in relationships involves who does what around the house. Research shows it's not just about hours spent, it's about feeling the division is fair.
Yes, and there are two big forces that make this hard. First, what economist Claudia Golden calls greedy jobs, careers that reward long, inflexible hours in ways that make equal partnership really difficult.
Right. When one person has a job that demands constant availability, the household often defaults to traditional gender roles out of necessity, not choice.
The second challenge is what Eve Rodsky calls invisible work in her book Fair Play, all the mental labor of noticing, planning, and managing that often goes unrecognized.
Rodsky's solution is brilliant. She reframes chores as cards that one person owns completely, including the thinking, planning, and execution for a set period.
That's so much better than the vague whoever notices does it approach, which usually means one person notices everything.
Exactly. And for dual career couples, Jennifer Petroglieri's research shows they pass through predictable transitions, from deciding whose job takes priority when, to redefining us after kids, to midlife reinvention.
So the labor contract isn't just about dividing tasks. It's about intentionally designing a system that works for your specific situation and revisiting it regularly. Can we talk about something that puzzled me for years? Why does desire often fade in long-term relationships, even when love grows stronger?
Esther Perel addresses this brilliantly in her TED Talks. She explains that love thrives on closeness, security, and predictability, while desire needs mystery, novelty, and space.
That makes so much sense. Many couples accidentally sign a merger-only intimacy contract, doing everything together, sharing every thought, and then wonder why the spark disappears.
Right. Perel suggests deliberately designing for separateness. Let your partner disappear into their element and return with stories. Maintain some privacy. Cultivate your own interests.
I love her idea that desire needs space to breathe. It's not about playing games. It's about maintaining your identity as an individual.
A simple practice is what I call the two adventures rule. Each partner chooses one pursuit per quarter that expands their sense of self. Maybe a class, a creative project, or a solo trip. Then you share the experience afterward.
That creates exactly the kind of space Perel talks about, where you can see your partner across a distance and be surprised by them again.
Naya read in a relatable, casual, empathetic voice, like a best friend who just gets you. Jackson read in a clear, articulate, steady voice, like a professor. We should touch on explicit legal contracts, too. Prenups and postnups used to carry a stigma, but that's changing fast.
Yes, a 2023 Harris poll found that half of U.S. adults are now open to prenups. They're becoming seen less as planning for divorce and more as thoughtful boundary setting.
Exactly. They force important discussions about debts, inheritances, business equity, and what happens if scenarios that many couples otherwise avoid.
I think of them as structured conversations about fairness under stress, a way to make decisions thoughtfully rather than letting state default rules decide for you during a crisis.
And they're especially valuable for people entering second marriages, those with children from previous relationships, or entrepreneurs with business assets.
The key is approaching these agreements as protective for both parties, not as weapons or signs of distrust. So how do we pull all this together? What's the practical plan for couples who want to strengthen their contracts?
I suggest a 90-day renegotiation plan. Month 1, start with a state of us check-in. What do we each want more of and less of this year in love, money, time, and connection?
Then create your money baseline. Pull all your financial information together and draft a one-page money map showing income, obligations, and goal buckets.
Month 2, deliberately choose your account architecture, joint, hybrid, or separate, and document your agreements about thresholds and what counts as shared expenses.
Month 3, design your labor contract using fair play principles. List recurring tasks, assign one owner for each, and define the minimum standard of care.
And throughout, build your conflict contract, the words and actions that help you repair and reconnect when things get heated.
What I love about this approach is that it treats relationships as living agreements that need regular attention and updating, not static contracts you sign once and forget. So, what's the takeaway from all this research on love and money contracts?
First, make the implicit explicit. Most relationship friction comes from unspoken expectations, not bad intentions.
Second, design for both unity and autonomy. The most satisfied couples find ways to be a team while preserving individual identity.
Third, create regular rituals for maintenance. Monthly money dates, quarterly adventure planning, and annual life design summits to reallocate work, money, and meaning.
And finally, remember that repair matters more than perfection. The strongest relationships aren't those without conflict, they're those with robust repair systems.
That's your daily dose of smarter from Be Freed Podcast. I'm Naya.
And I'm Jackson. Remember, the best relationships aren't found, they're designed, one contract at a time.